So today's gospel reading that we just heard seems to show Jesus is not giving a straight answer to a simple question. This isn't the first time that we've seen this sort of response from Jesus. And in today's reading, he answers a question with a question. Can we make some sense of what's going on? Jesus is preaching in one of the courtyards of the temple in Jerusalem, the holiest Jewish religious site. According to Matthew's gospel, this is the day after Jesus went into the outer courtyard of the temple and overturned the tables of those changing money and selling animals. That act disrupted practices that had gone on for a while. They were probably making profit for the temple, but were not in keeping with religious requirements. Now, the high priests and scribes who questioned Jesus' authority were Jewish leaders, but they held their offices only with the blessing of the occupying Roman forces. So their authority was constrained by the intersection of religion and politics, with some finances thrown in too. So we have Jesus, who just disrupted questionable religious practices, being confronted by people who didn't want disruption of any kind. And so they ask Jesus about the authority behind his teaching and his activities. Now, some scholars argue that the religious leaders are seeking a name of some known religious teacher or mentor so that they can put Jesus into a box of some kind and come to grips with his activities. And then they can override that person because they're the supreme authorities of Jewish faith. Now, other scholars will say this, that the religious leaders are actually hoping that Jesus will say that he receives his authority directly from God. Then they could accuse him of blasphemy or could take him in for intense questioning. Just as we might perhaps do. Either way, they want a way to control Jesus and to stop his disruptive activities. Oh, and by the way, to preserve their own positions. But Jesus knows what is in their hearts. So instead of answering directly, he instead asks that question back to them. And remember, this is happening in one of the courtyards of the temple where there might be tens or hundreds of witnesses. So Jesus asks back about where John the Baptist's authority came from. You remember John the Baptist, he's the person who lived out in the wilderness and was baptizing people to cleanse them from their sins. But this question puts the authorities in a hard spot. Remember, Jesus was baptized by John. And during that baptism, a voice from heaven was heard proclaiming Jesus to be God's son. And John himself said that Jesus is one who is much greater than he was. But the crowds in the temple courtyard believed John to be a holy person. Many people experienced baptism by John, and they likely know of what happened at Jesus' baptism. So if the temple leaders say that John's authority doesn't come from God, the people will be dismayed. Maybe I should say dismayed, to put it mildly. The leaders will risk losing their stature, losing their reputation. And if the leaders say that John's authority doesn't come from God, it's going to be bad. If they say that his authority does come from God, then they appear to be hypocrites because they haven't followed John's teaching and sought forgiveness of their sins and paid attention to what he said. And because they should recognize that Jesus' authority comes from God as well, given what transpired at Jesus' baptism. So instead, the temple leaders do the politically safe thing, saying that they don't know where John's authority come from. That does the least damage to their reputation, enables them to maintain their authority, at least in their own opinion. But Jesus doesn't let them get away with it. He says that they know better but do the wrong thing. Jesus implies that they talk a good game but don't actually do what they preach. They ask for people to be observant religiously, to follow the laws, to be God-loving. But they've proven to be inflexible and rule-driven, ignoring signs from God around them, likely in an attempt to retain their own status and their own position as leaders within the Jewish religion and with the governing Romans. So Jesus said that people who are perceived to be of the lowest morals will go into heaven before the temple leaders will, because even they have heard and embraced the message that John brought, and they've embraced the teaching of Jesus. Jesus is telling us what to do, what our faith teaches us, not to say we are going to do the right thing, but then take no action. If we act as we are called as Christians, the authority for our actions comes from God. Remember, this all presumes that we actually do what we say we're going to do, and not only make statements of good intent, but then do something else. We can probably think of times when we have said that we were going to do the right thing, but then not actually taken any action. As a Christian, I can say that I love my neighbor, and everybody at church will be happy with me. I'm stating that I will do what Jesus' teaching tells me to do, but then if I go out and mistreat others, I'm nowhere near living out that teaching. I'm not acting upon the authority of what Jesus taught. I pretend to behave with that authority behind me, but I do whatever I want. Sometimes I might do that to preserve some position that I have in the community, or to serve some other authority, or to preserve my own privilege. So all of that is background to the context that we're in today of Orange Shirt Sunday, in recognition of the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. Many denominations of the church in Canada cooperated with the Indian residential school system. The Roman Catholic Church, the Presbyterian Church, the United Church, the Anglican Church, and others ran a system that systematically tried to assimilate Indigenous peoples and to erase their cultures. On Sundays, these churches all preached about the need to love our neighbors. And then they collaborated with the federal government in that system. Looking particularly at the Anglican Church, going back to the 16th century and even before that as the church in England, the Anglican Church had a long tradition of being intertwined with the British Crown. There are many towns in Canada where Anglican churches are located immediately adjacent to the courthouse, and often the local jail. I was in a church last summer where there was a tunnel from the jail to the church. A consolidation and mutual reinforcement of power. And of course, some church leaders were also highly placed in the political elite. The residential schools are one example of the operation of the church for its own benefit in collaboration with the government. Money was involved, as were reputation, prestige, power. Even as early as the 1910s, we knew that the system was in dire need of reform. And yet the church continued in its role. Surely that was neglect of the authority granted to the church by Jesus to love our neighbors. But others also managed to neglect where their authority came from. I recently saw on the CBC website a short video describing the content of a French school history book in common use in Quebec in the 1950s. This book was approved for use by the provincial and church education authorities. But lest we try to point a finger at Quebec, similar books were used elsewhere in Canada at the time. Here's one quote from that book. "Some Indians were enemies, hunting down the French and killing them off one by one. They derived great pleasure from capturing little children, such as yourselves, bringing them to their village, and devouring them." Surely that was a misuse of the authority on the part of the education authorities, who were and are tasked with educating young people, with building a stronger society. Instead, they opted to keep their privilege, to maintain a poor state of relations for years and generations to come between the Indigenous peoples of Canada and those who we might call settlers. If you have any doubts about that intention, or that intention had long-standing effects, you should know that quote came from a textbook for third graders. So Jesus calls us to love God, to love our neighbors. That involves doing what we say we are going to do. Now is the time to tell truth. Now is the time to reconcile with all our neighbors. Or perhaps more accurately, now is the time for there to be a conciliation between Indigenous and settler peoples. There can't be a reconciliation if there never was a coming together. Not reconciled. We need to concile. That involves listening with generosity, being willing to join in partnership, loving one another, even if that means losing a bit of our status and a little bit of our privilege. Do what we say as Christians.